And what you do is through your meditation and your self-analysis, you decide that you're going to reassemble your personality at a higher level, at a higher level, a higher level. And you gather out of that personality those elements of it which are worthy, and you begin to assemble them around this higher point of consciousness, which is closer to the soul. And you begin to add things from your studies, from your meditation, from your service work. You begin to pick up qualities which are not entirely divine, but are highly recommendable. And so you insert them into this method of integration. And although the personality is wobbly, it's beginning to round itself out. You may have to do this several times, but each time you're doing it, you are reaching closer and closer to the higher self. Eventually the wheel spins, indicating that the amount of energy that the soul is pouring in is getting near to maximum. And then there comes radiation off this integrated personality. You can tell when they walk into a room. They have confidence, they have balance, they have the ability to tread the middle path. They are not upset by this or that. They can exert power or they can exert love. Know what that means? On the outside, power, the fist. But when that has had to be used, it's good to be able to open the hand with a lovely soft palm there and gently to caress. Love, power. Will and power, love. Always think of these matters, especially when you're getting involved in the synthesis of the personality into the psyche of the individual. There are many lovely stories concerned with this process, illustrating it. If I've told you, stop me. Let me tell it to you again. There was a young man who was an actor, and therefore, if the actors will pardon me, therefore very unstable in personality. He drank and he smoked and he womanized, and he was everything that actors are usually capable of. But one day somebody came along to him and offered him a new part. And the new part was in T.S. Eliot's Murder in the Cathedral. Murder in the Cathedral. And in it he had to play Thomas a Becket. Thomas a Becket, the saint. Saint Thomas a Becket. Who had courted martyrdom. Had gone out of his way to martyr himself sneering at the king who sent four knights to murder him. He loved the part. Long rehearsals in a church where the scene, the action was going to take place, and he prepared himself for this leading part. Apparently he looked the part exactly. So the great day came. The great day was approaching. Then he hit upon an idea to perfect his performance before the opening night. And his idea was that he would act out the part of Thomas a Becket as it really was. He would give up his smoking, give up his various habits, attitudes and everything, and he would be the saint. And he did this. And he did this for some weeks, and eventually felt the part as it should be. And then the show came off, and he was acclaimed a great success. He was Thomas a Becket to a T. When the show was over, he had to decide whether he was going to continue in his role as Thomas a Becket, blending it with his life, or whether he was going to go back to his old ways. And that's a perfect indication of this. That you take on a new life. Thursday you start your spiritual diary. Thursday it's going to be harmless to it, harmlessness to every living thing. Thursday it's going to be the start of some esoteric classics. Thursday I'm going to begin to write out this, the voice of the silence in my diary so as to spiritualize it. Change your life, change your attitudes. Just like this man had to do as Thomas a Becket. Think about these things. We need to look a little into what is known as spiritual values. In psychosynthesis, we build a greater spiritual number of qualities into the aura. And these are what we call the true spiritual values. Let us look at the problem of integration from another viewpoint. The soul, immortal, enduring. The personality, rather fragile, depending on most of its stability with the roots that it establishes in the material world. It's nonsense to say that a savage should be a spiritual person. A savage has not yet established his roots in the world. It is right for the savage to establish his roots. But it is not right for the person who is progressing rapidly to retain his roots. At this stage, the personality, symbolized by an inverted triangle, has practically no connection with the soul. Just the tiniest rope thread, as it were. The next stage in this procedure is that the movement of the soul into more lives establishes something more of a link. We call that link the antakarana. The roots begin to break. The result of it is that there is the passage of spiritual qualities into the personality. The antakarana has widened. The flow of energy into the personality would be about 2 or 3% of the soul's capacity. After that, the process hastens up. The process hastens considerably. That process hastens considerably. Maybe the person has had some tragic experiences in life. The most tragic experiences are very useful for the personality. Madame Blavatsky said, "Pain is heaven's merciful medicine for the spiritually sick." And by the spiritually sick, we mean materialists. Those who are entirely interested, concentrated, orientated towards material things are spiritually sick. They have lost memory of the higher self. To them you can never persuade any sort of spiritual unfoldment. I have people that I'm associated, first of all, talking about irrelevances. I only am concerned with people who are esoteric. I'm not saying that you should be like I am. I'm just saying this is how I deal with irrelevancies to get through my day. My family in South Africa, some of them in England, are not interested in the esoteric. I have nothing to do with them. I don't dislike them. I don't punish them.
but I just don't have anything to do with them. One of them is esoteric. I have a lot to do with that person. And the same attitude should be understood in the esoteric world. The truth is that we're being kicked around. We're being kicked around. Look at all the esoteric movements here in Britain, never mind America, where things are different. The esoteric groups here are all broke. Spiritualism is absolutely broke. See the shabby little churches that they're trying to survive in, and the difficulties that they're undergoing, and also other esoteric groups. What we need to do is to recognize that there is such a thing as materialism, and that material organizations are on the other side of the fence. When I have to deal with them, unfortunately I have to. People think I sit under the apple tree in meditation all day. Sometimes I'm 2 or 3 hours on the phone, sometimes with 2 or 3 others on the phone, dealing with materialists. And I adopt what is known as the Philistine approach. And only for them, not for anyone else, only for them. And the Philistine approach is to use the same techniques that they use, but use it on them. And as I always say to my group, I'm at war with materialism. It's the only way I can continue. I'm at war with them. And the Bible is often quoted as being a very horrific book because of the cruelty and the wars and so on. But if it's taken allegorically, then the Bible is accurate in that we who understand, we're the goats, they're the sheep. There's going to be a choice between the goats and the sheep. We're at war. Now you say, well, where's your goodwill? The goodwill is there. If it will work, if it will work, that's fine. But if it doesn't, there's no necessity to retreat. I don't accept turning the other cheek as always right. I don't agree that Jesus had the kind of qualities that the Christian church teaches. The Dead Sea Scrolls say the opposite. And they're valid. No one argues about that. They're valid. Whether they will be looked at and accepted by the Catholic Church and others is a different matter. And so there are ways of dealing with materialism, and the Philistine approach is a good one. Use the same approach that they use it on them. And irrelevances, of course, are dealing unnecessarily gently with business people. I never ever try and convert anybody. You will never catch me trying to convert anybody. I got over that years and years ago. You just leave them to their karma. Leave them to their karma. If the karma is good, it will steer them towards you, towards us, towards the esoteric. And there's nothing much else you can do about it. Crusade, yes. But look at the size of our normal audience. It's tiny. But Madame Blavatsky said, we are the few. But we are the few who are many if you take them all into account all over the world. Let's get back to the hard work. The soul, yes. The soul begins to take an ever-increasing interest in its vehicle. At first, the vehicle is not much more than a Macintosh to the soul. I'm going out. I'm going to put my raincoat on. That's the physical body. The soul has its own evolution. It has its own world. And if this is non-cooperative, it is ignored for the time being, fed with a little energy. But slowly and surely, the love between the soul and its vehicle is established, And if this vehicle will begin to break the last roots with materialism, and if it will begin to practice the spiritual qualities that we have been discussing earlier, if it will practice harmlessness to man, if it will practice things like joy and wisdom, and wisdom lovingly applied, and things like that, if the personality will practice that, then the soul will pour more and more energy down. Now mark well that if that personality runs completely off the rails, if it is not going to do the soul's purpose, the soul will not only neglect it to pass energy to it, it'll cut the energy off altogether. And the result of this will be, sooner or later, endogenous depression. That depression that seems to come out of nowhere, that the medical world has not the slightest idea of its cause. Not the reactive depression, where you've lost a child in an accident, where your husband's business has gone broke, where all sorts of things have occurred, and you are naturally depressed by it. That's reactive depression. We understand reactive depression. We can treat it. But when the soul has been sidestepped, when it is no longer able to reach its personality, it might decide that it is not worth going on with that life. And in that case, or for the time being, and in that case, the energy flowing from the soul into its personality is cut off. And the immediate result of that, it may take a little while, the immediate result of it is endogenous depression. And the treatment for endogenous depression is application of shock treatment, through an instrument that somehow or the other will occasionally change the situation so profoundly that the soul will try again. The change in the individual as a result of the shock treatment is not, in our opinion, worthwhile. We think that it is wrong to use shock treatment. I have known some people who've had shock treatment, and their memory cells are blasted to hell. And they are often very different people, docile, unable to assert themselves, and so on. On the other hand, there may be some good examples of shock treatment. Those good examples are usually in individuals who are once more re-established in an attitude of mind that may take a direction that the soul can go in. And then the soul will connect up once again, and maybe that life will be rescued. So much for endogenous depression. The result of the failure of the personality and soul to establish an antakarana, a bridgehead, a rope between the higher and the lower. Then, of course, eventually, you find when you tread the path of discipleship that the personality has broken its roots with the material world. Now, we don't say, as Madame Blavatsky says, kill out ambition, but live like one ambitious. I'm as ambitious as anyone, but I'm not ambitious to own property. I'm not ambitious to be prominent in the world of politics, though I could probably outtalk most of them. I have no ambitions for things that are personality aggrandizing. I am ambitious for the esoteric knowledge to spread around the world so that a true basis for the brotherhood of man can grow and grow. So you can kill out ambitious but remain ambitious. The difference is that your orientation is not back to the personality, but your orientation is to implement the soul's purpose. And so the soul and its vehicle grow closer together, the antakarana widens, eventually the soul is an apposition, that means similar, is in phase with its personality, the two are joined, and the interplay of energy is such that this individual is, as a personality, is able to undertake tremendous projects, and he will not be discomforted at the thought that the project will not be fulfilled in his lifetime. Because it is not the personality that is deciding things, it is the higher self that is deciding things. And in the end, of course, the result of this is that the two overshadow, or one is the personality is overshadowed, and this is the Star of David, the symbol of human perfection. Human perfection. Now what we have to do in order to achieve that is to demonstrate in our lives that we understand what spiritual values are. The list of spiritual values that you're looking at is part of the Claregate course. They are numbered merely for convenience. As part of the course, you are asked eventually to return the sheet, numbering in order what you consider the most important of the spiritual values. And in discriminating what are true values, spiritual values, we strengthen the heart chakra. Let's consider some of these. Number one, the ability to see an aura. It's nice. It's fashionable. I can't see one, nor can most of you. But what you can do is feel the human aura. You can sense the human aura by its feel. You can walk into a room and feel a wall of hatred against you. You can come up against somebody that you've just been introduced to, and you know straight away you're not going to get on with that guy. If there's a karmic factor between you as well, the hairs on the back of my neck go up like that. And I know that I have difficult karma with that individual and that I must not meet him on ground which is going to aggravate the karma further. Maybe I can do him a service in such a way that he will unbend and the karma can be resolved in an equable fashion. So the ability to see the aura is somewhere down near the bottom of the list. That does not mean to say that seeing the aura has not got its uses. Just as we say that even what do you call a dog that's not purebred? Mongrel. Even the mongrel dog can have a super sense that enables it to smell out drugs. Doesn't have to be purebred to do that. It can have this sense that anybody can have it. Many savages have it because they live close to nature like the American Red Indian. And they can sniff the wind, they can smell rain, and they can often sense the aura. Do people really see colors in the aura? The answer is no. The answer is that the aura has qualities in it, but these qualities have no color. The difficulty comes when the person who sees the aura, and there's no doubt about it, they almost certainly do, sees the aura in color because they're looking at a quality like compassion. And because they haven't got the ability in the astral and physical brain to see compassion, they register it as a color. It's the nearest thing that the brain of the clairvoyant can get, is to see qualities like compassion and separativeness and jealousy, see them as colors. And so in a sense they do see color in the aura, but technically it is not colored. But not a lot of people know that. Importance of the age of the soul, the age of the soul. It's quite helpful if you're counseling. And we need spiritual counselors desperately, desperately. As I always say to my audiences, what we really need is not people who can teach. We need people who can listen. People who can listen, especially to esoteric people who have something to say. They could even charge for it if they are good listeners. Because people want to talk about their inner experiences. They're bursting out with experiences that they've had. Their dreams, their sensitivities, their difficulties with the marriage. It's inevitable if you're esoteric that the gloss of the sexual act is changed when you become more and more spiritual. It's inevitable. That doesn't mean to say that you have to write out the divorce papers straight away. What it means is that you have to use compassion. Not allow the marriage partner to see that you've cut him off, or the other way around. Sorry. Is that what they call a Freudian slip? Not to let him think that he is being neglected and is losing your love, but to show more of the higher love, compassion, unity, eternal manifestations of your love, platonic love, and let him see that the new life that you're living is going to be to his advantage. Very hard, but I told you this was a difficult part. And most women have to face that problem. If two of you are interested in the esoteric, both of you, God bless, thank heaven. But it's not always like that. The age of the soul. How many lives on the earth? So we talk about young souls, 20, 30 lives, still unable to grow up in a highly organized society, only in tribal states. And then as the number of lives increases, they're able to take up residence, as it were, in the mainly Atlantean stock on the earth. And the kind of environment in China, in India, as peasants, is manageable. As manageable. But then, as the process accelerates and hundreds of lives are lived on the earth, you're reaching a stage where you have very highly complex individuals, like the kids coming into incarnation today. Don't think that you can push them around like you were pushed around 50 years ago. Don't think because you're mother or grandmother had to work a 60-hour week in a departmental store, that they're going to do it, and threaten them with it, because it will be like water on a duck's back. They may not know exactly what it is that they want, but my goodness me, they are highly advanced. When I lecture in the East End of London and other places like that, and it's packed with kids, youngsters, I mean 17-year-olds, older than that, they come to their conclusions, though they've only attended one lecture, way ahead of what we were able to do 30 years ago, 20 years ago. They're a different group of humans altogether, and the only way we can credit them is to say that they are people who have had more lives, they're spiritually advanced, than their mothers and fathers have been. I know it hurts like hell for mothers and fathers to have to admit that their kids are more spiritually advanced than they are, and therefore won't work an 8-hour day. Some of them are the slaves of Rome and Greece, back in incarnation. And they have these added factors in their attitudes. Sometimes many lives on earth works in a deleterious way. Works in a way in which the old soul with many lives on earth swerves away from spiritual unfoldment. Like the old soldier, he knows everything about his job and never gets caught unawares. So the old souls can sense all sorts of spiritual things. But when they hear bakers in town lecturing, they tell their kids to go, not them. Because they know the kids will need it, it'll be useful to them, but they know whenever Baker comes into town and they attend a lecture, then they get all disturbed and upset. They feel they should be advancing faster than they are, and they haven't kept up their spiritual diary, and he'll scold them for not doing it, and so on and so on. Old souls who have reached a stage of chronicity in which they don't really want to change. They're happy with the view that they've got from their part of the mountain. They've climbed so far, I don't want to go any further. It's too difficult. Just leave me alone here. I want to rest. Have a look at the view and see how the other poor devils are managing as they go past me. And so on. So the expression there may not necessarily mean what it says. The age of the soul, understanding of it is important. And you should learn to understand the new kids coming into incarnation. The Master D.K. said that Buddhas galore are waiting to incarnate, but the bodies are not here yet. And the civilizations, the cultures, are not here yet. The cultures will be here in Europe about the year 2025, when the great ray of art and harmony through conflict is going to sweep into manifestation. As the fifth ray of concrete knowledge and analytical science passes out, replaced by the fourth ray of art and harmony, we're going to have a renaissance in Europe again. A new renaissance. The cities of Europe will grow tired of state government. Sorry, federal government, of whatever it is. And the city-states will emerge again as they did in Athens and Paris and Rome and Milan and places like that will demand and eventually have the right to build their own cities within the framework of their nation or Europe. But they'll build their own cities, and it'll be an opportunity for a lot of these youngsters to come in and express the kind of beautiful energies that they have. Exciting times, the return of the city-states. How will it happen? It happened a month ago. In Florence, when they bombed the Uffizi Gallery. What are they going to do? What are the Italians going to do? What are we going to do? There's only one thing they can do, and that's to take all the precious art of Italy and put it into armor-plated galleries. So it's going to be a tremendous age. Yes, we're going to have to build bomb-proof galleries. And that will mean taking them out of the sites that they're in, putting them together for the sake of cheapness, and building them and having them safe from terrorists. And that will be the beginning of the new states. Fascinating. An attitude of joy. I would rate this one high. I would rate this one high. Joy is infectious. Joy is infectious. And those who can spread joy, and there are very few. I had one pass through the ashram about 10 years ago. Usually when people tread the path, they become morose. They're choked with their own difficulties. They've got that syndrome again. Can't see more than 15 inches. Very hard to manifest joy when you're trying to live in both worlds at once. And when you can find someone that can do it, and pray God it's an extrovert, then it's very lovely indeed. I think they're great. And if you can find them, you should have them in the groups that you form. Don't go and form groups that are lopsided. As I said, people rushing around teaching and healing each other. I met a group once, and they had about 40 people in the group, families, everything. They spent the whole damn day preparing vegetarian diet. They didn't do anything else. There was nothing creative there at all. The kids, the grown-up, they all sat around preparing the vegetarian food, and it was very nice food. But there was absolutely nothing else going on there at all. You have to think about these things. Serenity, tranquility, an attitude of joy, very lovely indeed. What do you suspect when people don't have a very eruptive astral body, that they're very calm individuals who never lose their tempers? What ray of the astral body, Marcus?
Second ray
astral body, yes. An astral body on the ray of love wisdom. Whereas 60% here today have astral bodies on the sixth ray of devotion and idealism. They get ratty very easily. They can cry in front of the television. They can hemorrhage emotionally. Belief in a divine plan, in an architect. Well, it's a very telling point, that. Because most people today, thanks to the church, haven't the faintest idea what God is. They don't. And because they don't know, they hate your God, the one you go for. God is a very variable thing, according to the consciousness of the one perceiving him. My little white cat thinks I'm God. And when it rains or snows or does something like that, it blames me. And there are billions of people that think of God as a kind of Moses-like figure. For me, my God, well, our galaxy, the Milky Way, is a tiny little cell within the body of that greater being. And whether he knows or cares about Douglas Baker, I haven't the faintest idea. So we all have different gods. But I think we are agreed that there is a divine architect. Where did I get that from? A few down. What number? Belief in a divine... Pardon? Number six. Belief in a divine... Yeah, there's good basis for it. Because I'm confused. I'm confused because I see what a magnificent instrument the brain is. The brain is the most perfect computer in the world. It's not totally perfect, but it's the most perfect one. And you could take all the labor in the world and set it to build a brain like the human. And you could take all the wealth of the world to pay for it. But they would never be able to come up with a computer like the human. Who built it? It evolved in 3 billion years out of primordial slime, says Darwin. And once it's built by this miraculous process of survival of the fittest or selection or natural selection, once all that's happened, we find that 9/10 of the brain has no known function. We're only using 1/10 of the brain. If it evolved under the Darwinian concepts of having purpose and use and natural selection and so on, why doesn't it all work? And then, of course, if we have such a brilliant computer, who programs it? Where? How? These questions, ladies and gentlemen, remain unanswered because they are unanswerable in terms of science. That's why you don't hear anything about them. And if there was ever any evidence that there is a divine being, a teleological individual, who is master of the universe and has willfully created this structure, then the computer of the human brain is that evidence. The fascinating thing about all this is that it's you. All this is you. These are just some of 37 of 100 spiritual values. Many people have to rush around wondering what on earth they can do with their lives. They know they've got to do something with them. When you look down the list, you've got something to do in the next few weeks till I see you again, few months till I see you again. And you must do that. You really must change your lives. And you must introduce such qualities into your personality life that the soul would say, yes! I'll give the energy to this personality. I'll show it what to do. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, if you are overshadowed by the higher self, your life will change in many wonderful and beautiful ways. Thank you very much.